you like to comment on the question of transportation in the so-called Northeast Corridor, the fact that we've got one fast rail route and we've got an awful lot of clobbering up on Route 3, Route 46, and that sort of thing. Is there any kind of a network model being applied to that?
As far as models exist now, not enough. It's a beautiful example of a place where you can look at part of that system problem and prove anything you want. You can look at the train part of it and say, if we spent X million dollars on a high-speed train, then it would relieve the situation to a certain extent. Someone else can say, short-haul aircraft would relieve the situation to such and such extent. We know enough to know that when you said those two things, you haven't said enough, because that immediately opens the other part of the problem. Well, all right, if you're going to have short-haul aircraft take them and they're going to land somewhere, how are you going to get people from where they've landed to where they want to go? Are you going to do that with mass transit, or are you going to do it with cars? And if you do it with cars, where are you going to put the parking lots, and et cetera? So I don't mean to duck the question, except to say that a full realization of the fact that the question is a little more difficult, shouldn't say a little more, it's a lot more difficult than people thought when they first started looking at it. That's how far we've got at the center, is to realize how darn difficult it is to move out in that area. Furthermore, we have enough knowledge now, just in our few first faltering footsteps in this area, to know that we sure better hurry, because it's getting worse. All right, the question is, if you have an idea of something you think might benefit a local community or society in general, how do you present it to the Department of Transportation? Now, I'm going to answer that by reminding you of something I said a little earlier. Since the customer is so diffuse, you're not going to get a simple answer, such as if you want to sell a new bomber, you know who you go sell it to. You know that it's very complicated. You know there are many, many layers. And if you want to sell something the Air Force, you sell it not to one thing called the Air Force, but several hundred people who are in the Air Force. But still, it's selling it to the Air Force. Now, let's take two different kinds of ideas. If you have an idea on how to help the Transportation System Center do its job, which I gave you a very brief summary of how we plan to do our job. Parenthetically, I'll say we had a meeting at the center, a two-day meeting very recently, and invited as many people as we could recognize were interested to come. And we spent 2 days answering the part of your question, how do you do business with the transportation system at center itself? And it boils down to this. If you understand what it is we're trying to do, and I've given you a very brief view of that, and you think you could help us do the job, you think you could help us figure out how to set up a model to show automobiles are used by the people in the community, or if you figure you could help us with any one of the other 70 projects we have, which I have not gone into tonight, but which you could find out about, then your approach is kind of simple. You go talk to our procurement people. We got a fellow there that's just sitting there saying, come on in and tell me what your ideas are. And until we've been in business a few more years and got so much business that we get a little bit more bureaucratic, you'll find it rather refreshing to go and sit down with a fellow and be able to talk right away to the man who might make the next step, who might tell you whether or not it seems feasible that at this point you ought to pursue your idea and make a proposal. So it's fairly simple to deal with us, although the areas are kind of restricted. Now let's move up one layer. We are certainly not the procuring agent for the whole Department of Transportation. There are people in each one of these administrations. There's an associate administrator for R&D, only they call it RD&D, Research, Development, and Demonstration, in UMTA, who's the fellow you go see if you've got an idea on a PRT. There's a similar guy in the Federal Rail, similar guy in FAA, and so forth. Because there are these layers in the government, you occasionally will get what looks like a runaround. You run into CTSC, and they'll say, that's not exactly what we're involved in. We're not doing all of the FAA work. Why don't you go see the FAA? And you go see the FAA, and they may tell you to come back and see TSC. Just realize that that's just what happens when you're starting out this way. But the two places in the federal government to go are TSC or the administrations in Washington. Where you go out in the local communities, I'm just beginning to learn. The last 3 or 4 months, I've met a bewildering array of state highway officials, mayors, urban planners, city planners, county planners, transit administration planners, and so forth. And I'm just beginning to get a feel for what it's like out in the country. My first pass at it, I've had this refreshing experience. I suppose I'll be disillusioned when I stumble into the wrong office, but so far I found these people out there brighter than you'd think. You know, we get kind of used to thinking that us and the aerospace people, we're pretty bright people, and all those rubes are out in the country and so forth, but there's some pretty competent people struggling with the problem of how to improve the transportation systems throughout the country. I can't help but believe, I mean, we all know how bad things are. I'm telling you, I've seen all kinds of efforts at all layers to try and do something about it. In short, I think there are a lot of people that know they've got a problem. Now, you engineers know that's about half the battle. And I'm giving you a long answer. I don't know who you go see out throughout the country, but, you know, you kind of start out with somebody in your company who can call up the mayor of Atlanta and say, we'd like to help you with your problem, and he'll shuffle you off to some planner or something or other. It's, in other words, the age-old problem of where do you find the market is there. And I can't, at this point, give you any more than general advice on how to deal with those people. But that's the companies that figure out right now, that pull the Dutch Kindlebergs, that shove the rabbits in the hat now that they're going to pull out five years from now throughout the country, they're the ones that are going to make money. The 10 years in the past in transportation, the people made money were the people who knew how to pour concrete. This idea of building an interstate highway system was a marvelous idea. And any of you who've driven across the country recently, having not done it, well, let me tell you what I did. I drove to the National Soaring Championship in Phoenix. I've driven across that darn country 10 or 12 times, but not in the last 10 years. It's delightful to get on those things and go screeching around cities and go right where you want to go. It's a marvelous thing. So while we're bitching and complaining about what a lousy transportation system we have in this country, let me point out that is a goal established by somebody sometime in the past, which has been met or almost met. And we've got the best highway system in the world by far. Go try the great with autostradas and everything in Europe and compare them with our interstate. The interstate's marvelous. They're bogged down in a few cities by well-meaning and thoughtful and thoughtless and brilliant and stupid ecologists, some combination of all those people. But except for the few bogged downs, I tell you, that's a tremendous success. And there are lots of millionaires in the country who got in on that in the right way and at the right time. So I'm damn sure, I don't know exactly what the steps are going to be, but I'm damn sure in the next decade we're going to see markets develop for transportation that'll open your eyes. The question is there any detailed document that'll tell you what's going on at TSC? I'll let you be the part inventor of an answer to that question. Everybody that I used to know someplace that finds out what I am now call me up and say, can I come by and find out what's going on? That started the idea we'd have this industry symposium, which we did, and we had 400 people there for 2 days answering that question. I'm going to find a way to make the record of that meeting, which we put on tape, available in some way so that if you'd go ask your marketing guy, say, how do we find out what's going on at TSC? Say, well, I know, you write the U.S. Government Printing Bureau and send them $4.10 or whatever it is. Name of the man you see at the center is Leo Roach. The question is the ratio of hardware to software projects. As I said earlier, because we're really just getting started in the software, I would say that the ratio is 90 to 95% hardware and 5% software. Out fiscal 78 or 79, if you look at that, you'd say 30% in software. That's a rough, or soft sciences. Software is the wrong word, soft sciences. Question is, would our charter include ways of making it unnecessary for as many people to use transportation? The answer is yes, and that gets into a very interesting area. These 200 million customers don't necessarily want to do things that are logical. If you start telling them to do things that are logical, that's fine. And if they ignore you, that's freedom. And if you start telling them they're going to do these logical things, that's fascism. So you really tread a narrow line between fixing it so that people can do what they want to do and trying to legislate so that they can't do what they want to do. I think the answer that you probably are looking for is better communication, having business conferences without traipsing back and forth across the country. While I'm at it, let me say that the whole problem of how do you prevent traffic pileups in cities when you start making it prohibitive is a real deep problem. You know, charge people a tax to go into town. We can work up all kinds of elaborate mechanical gadgets that'll do this, you know, but you fix it so if you drive within 2 miles of town, you pay a buck, and if you get within 1 mile of town, you pay $10, and if you go right downtown, you pay $20. Well, what this does is fix it so the rich people go downtown, and the poor people park a little way out and march on the town with big banners saying, down with the Department of Transportation. So this is a hard thing to fight. I think the idea is that some mayors do it, just saying we're going to abolish automobiles in this area, just make a big ball out of it. I think that will work, but I find these taxation ways of making it tough, prohibitive parking fees and so forth, a kind of hard way to do it. Another thing I've rediscovered is Ohm's Law, and that is if you make a wider highway, there's just going to be more cars on it. If you're trying to fix congestion by making it easier for traffic to flow, you're fighting a losing battle if your goal is to ease congestion. So I think what we have to be careful is say our goal is not to ease congestion, but to fix it so more people can do what they want to do. And now, as far as your communication idea, I personally am very interested in it. We're going to need some real deep psychologists to really look at it, because it's incredible. What is it that's missing? You have a good communication system. The audio works very well. Then you have a very good TV, so you can look at the guy and see whether he grimaces or not when you tell him the price. And in spite of all that, people will still say, yeah, but that's fine to sell those little hammer phrases, but if I'm going to sell that $20 million thing, I got to be right there myself. I'm not sure whether it's all nonsense. The question is, on the subject of hijacking, what is being done today, and what can be done? We took on part of this job at a time when it was very, very confused. There were well-meaning entrepreneurs running all over the country saying, this gadget will pick up weapons, and this will do this, and this will do that, and they're running all over the country. Some of the devices were very useful, some of them weren't. I wouldn't accuse any of these people of trying to mislead anybody, but literally people didn't understand what they had. We put out a consumer's guide on magnetometers and metal detectors. And we got out of the Freedom of Information Act for a damn good reason. If a hijacker got a hold of this book, it'd be very helpful and tell them right just exactly how to blow up an airplane. So these things are available not to you as the general public, but they're available to, you know, to anybody who's got some kind of a need, and to airport managers and other people. And they just kind of cut out the nonsense. This particular device, no matter how well-meaning it is and how well it's made, will not detect a certain type of weapon. A bill was passed in Congress to purchase the right kinds of gadgets and give them to the airlines. Now, the airlines, the more progressive airlines, had already started to buy some of these things. So there it was a matter of taking over the purchase order from the airlines and giving them back their money and FAA kicking in the money. In the case of some airlines who, for one reason or other, hadn't put in a purchase, the FAA is purchasing equipment for them. And so the combination of the technical work we did and the purchase of the equipment is part of the problem. Is there a viable alternative to the internal combustion engine? Well, as far as coming down the road in the next year or two, something that's as good as a Ford 289 cubic inch engine in a Mustang to do all the things that people like to do, that kind of acceleration and that kind of jazzing around in the very near future, I'd say no. All of you will agree that if you put a long enough time on something, then unless it's a violation of one of the laws of thermodynamics, you can do darn near anything. Well, let me tell you about a pollutionless train. Very efficient, completely pollutionless train. This train is going to have a turbine in it that runs as a result of the combustion of liquid hydrogen in an environment of liquid oxygen, and that, if you remember, makes water. We'll use the cryogenic, these are cryogenics, and we'll use them to make super cool magnets, which are awful darn efficient. We'll use that for levitation. We'll manufacture this oxygen and hydrogen in some part of the world where we can use nuclear energy to do it. It'll be far, far away from anything anybody cares about, some bad land somewhere. If you don't like that, we'll take the what's left and hide it on the back of the moon. So we got a really beautiful system. It's lacking one thing. Tell us how to make a turbine blade that'll work at 5,000 degrees. There's nothing that can't be done if we work on it long enough. The battery problem. Good Lord, the simple approaches to making better batteries don't work. The complicated ones, right at the moment, look very impractical. You can't imagine running around with your little Mustang with a battery operating at 400 degrees in the back seat. The question is, what is the real advance in BART? That there's a great deal of discussion about it in the paper, and the questioner said it just looked like an automated trolley car to him. Let me ask a question. Have you ridden on it? Have you seen it or just read about it? Well, in the first place, it's really a first. It's the first time a community ever faced the problem and said, we're going to get a better transportation system. It's the first time in this century. And our hats go off to them. They didn't do it with the help of the feds. They did it all by themselves. They talked themselves into doing it. They floated bond issues. They did all kinds of impossible things to get that thing going. And if all they did was get it going and it fell off the edge of the cliff, they ought to have a medal for having at least done something. Now, as far as what kind of a gadget it is, when I first joined the department, I went down to Rohr to look at the car. To a casual observer, which is all I could be at that time, it seemed to me that building of that car was some of the very best things in the aerospace industry. Some good long extrusions taking place of all the junk that you find in the conventional cars made by car experts. Now look, you all know that a cantilever wing works. But the guys that build cars, they don't know how to do that. Inside, they put a seat, and the seat's got four little things on it called legs. And when you bring the darn thing in to be cleaned, you have to pay a guy $3.50 an hour to spend an hour cleaning one of these damn cars. Well, the BART car's got the seats cantilevered out from the edge, and along with the car, you get a vacuum cleaner that's the same width as the thing. You plunk it down in one end of the car, and zip, it's done. 15 seconds to clean out the car. There are things like that in there that make it very, very different than just an automated trolley car. The whole business, you buy a ticket. Instead of sweating out the ticket thing, you put a dollar bill in something, out comes a ticket. It says a dollar on it. You walk up to the gate you want to get in, you plunk it in, you walk through it, and the thing comes back, and now it says 60 cents on it because it's taken 40 cents out of it, and you climb on the BART, and off you go, and you get off it, and knock wood, no graffiti, no dirt, no filth, nothing. Just nice, clean, new cars. The convenience of a car cannot be beaten by any system that I can think of. You can come close to it. You can have what's called a dual mode. You can drive your car, you can conceive a system, you drive your car out of the same garage and drive it down, and instead of getting on the freeway, you know, where you'd enter the freeway, you get on something that's called a hump, and you get on that hump, and you forget your car, and in you go to town. It's whatever it is, it's mobile, it's a mobile road, or it's a flat car, or something, and then when you get to town, you get off it and drive to where you want to go. That is a compromise, and we're sure working on that. You get yourself the 7 best test pilots in the world, and then tell them you're going to replace them with a computer, and stand back. We really had something, starting with those marvelous guys that were the first astronauts, and getting ourselves into the Gemini program. You know the Mercury spacecraft was designed to be flown by monkeys, and then before you could find out anything about how spacecraft work, you had to destroy all that stuff and fix it so a man could fly it. The Gemini was designed to be flown by men. It's flown like an airplane. The Apollo was a compromise. And I was right smack in the middle. We had some people saying, gee whiz, let's just fix it so it's automatic. We had other people, these were the test pilots, saying, boy, every time we do that, we get in trouble. Look at this and that and the other thing, and it ought to be manual. The way it all worked out was you use your automatic control not because it's smarter than a man, but you use it so that it does all the routine things. And then man monitors the thing and is ready to use his great knowledge and his great intelligence and his great ability 100% for the problem of what do you do if something goes wrong. Now, without boring you with the details on it, we went from the place where these great astronauts were yelling and screaming at us till at the end of the program, they wouldn't dream of wasting their time making a manual reentry. They're completely sold on it. Right now, if you lined up 100 air controllers right now and I made the wrong statement, they'd all get mad at me because they think I was trying to put them out of business. But if we automate air traffic control thing, it'll be the same thing. And I've talked to someone about it at Oak City and says, you guys sound just like the astronauts, bless your heart, and that means you're just as good as they are, and just as smart. But all we're talking about in automating air traffic control, I said to these fellas, is fixing it so you can handle 100 ships instead of 50. And you watch what they're doing, and you just raise hell if you don't like what the machine's doing. And I think that's the answer to all of these things. Now, for example, do you know that one of the lines of the Paris Metro is automated? You know, that old great old big system out there, they've got one of them that's automated. And what happens is instead of having two people in the front end, one of whom drives the train and the other blows the whistle and closes the door, they got one guy, the guy that blows the whistle and closes the door and watches the gauges, and he can take over if the thing makes trouble. And I've ridden with him there, it works fine. So it's not a matter of either or. If you start saying, let's go from having a pilot and a co-pilot and an engineer in the front of a 747, to let's replace all three of those with some damn computer, I'm not going to fly in that stupid airplane. Not now and not forever. But if you fix it so, as we have, so that instead of the guy sitting there with a slide rule and a Jepsen chart trying to figure out where the hell he's going, you got an inertial system in there telling him where he's going. And you got three ways of his checking what the inertial system's saying, you know, with the Lorentz C and the other methods. You've got all this stuff going on. And the guy sitting there relaxed and reading the gauges and seeing what's going on, I feel pretty darn comfortable. So you want to divide the job up between man and the machine, and the things where man falls asleep, where he makes mistakes, where he can't operate fast enough, where he can be confused by just a multiplicity of data, let the machine do that. And let him do the things that require thinking. Alertness of the operator? Well, that's a good question. If you're not careful and you do this thing wrong, you can put him to sleep. That's what you're talking about. On the other hand, if you divide the load up properly, you'll keep the guy busy and interested with what he can do well. And we certainly did that on the spacecraft. Yep. The question is what can be done to alert people that there's an accident ahead, etc. Earlier on, I mentioned our main rural laboratory. That's one of the first experiments that was suggested to us, that we find ways of automatically alerting people to the fact that there's an accident ahead. So here's a roadside sign, and when the coils, it can be done without any policemen at all. You see, when these coils of wire in the road indicate that, and the computer that's attached to them, that there are a whole bunch of cars that have run down here and have stopped somewhere, then you can energize a sign that says that. I'd like to emphasize the difference between the fact that we had a center which had laboratories in it plus a little program management to a center which is essentially program management and not a laboratory. Now, that doesn't mean that we'll have nothing but guys sitting around smoking cigars and handing out money, but the role is to get money out into industry and into the universities and so forth, where these jobs can be done, and to do it in an intelligent way. I think that the kind of center we're trying to establish is relatively unique, except in NASA. Except in NASA. And I might add in passing that when somebody comes to me in the government now and asks me to do something, I'm overloaded. I've got more to do than I can do, even with these additional people we're going to have. I got twice as much work offered to me as I can accept. So I'm a broker as far as this work's concerned. I'm shipping work into any government lab that I can, particularly NASA. NASA's got some marvelous capability that I believe can be a tremendous help to transportation, and I've never thought of this before, but when NASA starts doing more to help transportation, then I'm sure they'll seek help from the people they're used to dealing with who are in aerospace. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.